The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. So there you have it. Interesting stuff, hey?
I don't know. Do we have to be afraid of the opinions of others?
Welcome to my world, Anthony. If I was afraid of that, yeah, exactly. We often have this conversation at home. My family say, can't you be maybe a little bit afraid of the opinion of others? But no, I don't think really that I can be.
I think we have to be strong in our opinions. And I think that, you know, we have to have educated opinions, not just formulate opinions without any basis. But I think once you've formulated, it's good to be strong about it. And there are so many interesting things to talk about today. I'm glad that we managed to get on a little bit earlier than usual, because lots of little snippets and some quite big stories as well, but just some of the smaller things. Israel's current COVID situation shows that we currently, I mean, even though there's still more than 1,300 people being diagnosed every day, new cases of COVID-19, currently only 139 people are actually hospitalized, with 62 people in serious conditions. So even though the numbers are certainly going up in terms of the number of new diagnoses, we're not feeling a massive increase in the number of people who are seriously ill. I think that the vaccination really showing its strength. Just another interesting thing, it also, there's a statistic that shows that the average stay of people in hospital, those who have been hospitalized, has decreased from around 10 or 11 days for each patient to more like 7 or 8 days. And again, that's being attributed in the large part to the effects of the vaccine. Another just related story is an Israeli company that has announced that it will be going into clinical trials very soon to test an oral COVID-19 vaccine. This is a company called Oramed Pharmaceuticals, and they have a joint venture with an Indian company, and they are going to be testing this oral vaccine very, very soon. It's a company that already has been testing oral ways of administering insulin in particular for type 1, type 2 diabetics. That apparently is going through a phase 3 clinical trial right now through the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, the oral insulin capsule. But they've now adapted and amended that particular medication methodology to try to apply it to an oral COVID-19 vaccine. It's going to be interesting to see whether that will be a story for the future as well as now. Of course, the Ben and Jerry story just continues to roll. I just wonder whether they could have hoped to get as much advertising as they're getting at the moment by embarking on a massive, hugely expensive advertising campaign. I somehow doubt that they would have got anywhere near as many mentions in the press as they're getting at the moment. But apparently the Australian Kashrut Authority has decided to remove Ben and Jerry's from their list, and a number of other Kashrut authorities are being encouraged to do the same. Wow. Do you think that's valid to remove it from the list of kosher food?
That makes me uncomfortable. So wait, the Kashrut departments are removing it or looking to remove Ben and Jerry's from their kosher list.
Right.
I don't know I don't know that makes me comfortable. I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 0618951019. I guess the question is this, does the morality of the owners and the behavior of the owners, should it impact the standard of kashrut or the authorization? I'm a bit conflicted. I'd love your view. 34519 or 0618951019. That's very interesting.
I thought it was interesting. Yeah. I mean, you know, on the one hand, we like the fact that people are stepping out and supporting Israel, trying to show a little bit of support against people who, you know, speak out negatively against Israel in the way that Ben and Jerry's have done. I mean, a hugely political statement being made through the sale of ice cream. I have to say quite a number of ice cream manufacturers, local ones in Israel, are doing very well out of this business.
I'm sure.
Because all of a sudden people are deciding we are not going to be eating Ben and Jerry's, and so Golda ice cream has all of a sudden become all the rage. Not that it was such a small thing to begin with, but it's become more of a rage now than it was before. So those are the little snippets, and we can talk about some of the big stories as well that are happening around Israel.
All right, so let's do that. Let's get on to some of the bigger stories, and one of which is that the northern border continues to attract attention for all the wrong reasons. What's happening there?
Well, a few things. First of all, there were more reports again overnight of airstrikes against targets in Syria, apparently in the Aleppo area, if we believe. Sorry, not in the Aleppo, in the Homs area. If we believe some of the reports that come out of the Syrian press, what I find so fascinating is that on the one hand, they say Syrian air defense has intercepted an Israeli attack. And then they go on to say, and there was a lot of damage on the ground. Maybe they may well have intercepted one or two, but clearly they didn't intercept all the attacks that came in. If what we're reading is accurate and correct. Apparently there's footage from the site where one of the missiles fell. It shows a massive crater that was left by the impact. But also in a kind of a related story or a story that's related to the area, there were two infiltrators that were spotted crossing the Lebanese border into Israeli territory last night. We don't have a lot of information about who are these people, and how come they managed to cross the border. We do understand that there was a message sent out to northern border communities, Israelis living on that northern border, to ask them to remain at home, at least for a certain period of time. That apparently has now been lifted and people are free to move around as they wish, even though, as far as we understand, the two infiltrators have still not yet been found and brought into custody. But this is a kind of, sounds like a similar story to one which happened a few months ago, when two infiltrators from Lebanon were finally found. They were hiding out in northern Israel. They'd managed to cross the border, and apparently they were job seekers. They were just kind of coming over from Lebanon looking for work in Israel, as you do. It doesn't sound to me like this infiltration last night is anything to be concerned about. We don't know whether the people involved were armed, whether they had any malintention, or whether it was just simply some innocent civilians who are looking for a slightly better life, or looking for some work opportunities and potentially some way to sustain their family. And of course, we do know that life in Lebanon right now is not a bed of roses. Lots and lots of issues going on in Lebanon. We can talk about that separately on another occasion. There's quite a lot to talk about things that are happening in Lebanon. But overall, people there are not having a good time. Of course, it comes on the back of those two rockets that were fired earlier in the week, and lots of speculation about who might have fired those rockets. Would it have been Hezbollah, who, of course, are very much rulers of the southern Lebanon area? Would it be other renegade groups? And the speculation that's come out since the rockets were fired is that they are probably Palestinian groups who are located in that southern Lebanon area and who've been receiving their instructions potentially from Gaza, or indeed even directly from Iran. Now, even though we don't necessarily distinguish between Palestinian groups in southern Lebanon or Hezbollah or even potentially Lebanese national forces, one of the things that's really in common about all of those together is the strong influence that Iran has over all of those groups. So whether it be a Palestinian group or a Hezbollah group located in southern Lebanon, ultimately they're under the control of Iran. There is a slight distinction, though, because I think that Hezbollah, obviously represent a much, much larger organization and potentially a much larger threat in that southern Lebanon area. So if Hezbollah had been the source of those rockets, there might be more concern than the fact that it seems now, as at least the security organizations seem to be, have come to the conclusion that those rockets were probably fired by renegade Palestinian groups in southern Lebanon. But still a lot of instability on that northern border, obviously a lot of protection, a lot of IDF activity around that area, and let's just hope that the summer will continue without too much further action there without too many further incidents.
Yeah, it's always an area just to keep an eye on. An Israeli software company is embroiled in controversy after it claims that its software had been used to monitor the phones of some senior world political figures. So it's interesting because I've got a conversation a little bit later, about 8:30, with Amnesty International here in South Africa, because apparently Cyril Ramaphosa's phone was one of them. Just give us a little bit of background about this.
Yeah, this is a story that's come out in the international press, publications, some reports that have been published in the Washington Post, I believe, in some other international, in the Guardian, I think, in the UK, and some other international newspapers about this particular story. It involves a company called NSO and their software, which is called Pegasus. Now, I mean, let's just paint a scenario for a moment. An Israeli software company creates a super clever piece of software which can somehow be planted onto somebody's iPhone without them knowing about it, without them actually even having to do anything. So they don't have to open a document or open an email or make any action at all. It somehow can be planted on their phone without them having to do anything or without them knowing about it. And in the process of planting this piece of software on their phone, whoever is controlling the software can have access to their contacts, to their emails, to their messages. They can even activate the microphone and the camera on that phone remotely without the user of the phone knowing about it. So here we have a really, really powerful piece of software which can somehow get through all the protections that these phones are supposed to have. And what do you do with it? So in the case of NSO, they've decided to call it Pegasus and sell it on the international market because they feel that this is something which could be useful and which could obviously generate a lot of money and has a certain purpose. Of course, if you use it incorrectly, it can be very problematic. And so the question is where one really draws the line as to what's acceptable and what's not acceptable use of a piece of software like this. Now, the Israeli security authorities, for example, might say it's perfectly justified for us to use it against people who are plotting terror activities against Israel. This is a good way for us to start to understand, to get some more information about what's going on in order for us to protect our people. Having said that, apparently it was also used on the phone of people surrounding Jamal Khashoggi, who we will recall was that Saudi journalist who was killed in the Saudi Arabian embassy in Istanbul. And we understand that he was killed because he had these anti-government sentiments, and he was writing anti-government stories. And not only was it planted on his phone, but it was planted on his girlfriend's phone. And so the question is whether that becomes inappropriate use of a piece of software like this. So a list of about 50,000 phone numbers was actually published, including people whose phones were effectively infiltrated by the software. And we understand that one of the operators of the software are the Saudi Arabian security authorities. What we also know is that NSO is only allowed to sell their software under the auspices of the Israeli Ministry of Defense. So all sales of their software are monitored and approved by the Israeli Ministry of Defense. Interesting that potentially one of those sales might have been to the Saudi Arabian security authorities, although we don't have that in writing, but we understand that they are one of the users of the software. And as you rightly point out, Cyril Ramaphosa was one of the names on that list of 50,000 whose phone apparently was infiltrated. French President Macron was another one, and a few other quite senior names around the world. You know, what do people think about this? How does one police a piece of software like this, which has such powerful implications, but can clearly be, when it gets into the wrong hands, be used for all the wrong reasons?
Mm. And from what I understand, in terms of the South African one, it was the Rwandan, it seems to be the Rwandan government that was looking to get information on Cyril Ramaphosa. So it gets a bit grey and uncomfortable, doesn't it?
It really, really does. And, you know, once again, the question is, who is it okay to sell this to?
And
who is it okay? Mm. And who is it not okay to sell it to?
Mm. I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 0618951019. It's just a very, very strange one. And as I said, I think in many ways a little bit uncomfortable. Henry said, "I'm glad it wasn't Cyril's iPad. He's very possessive of it. Did you see him frantically calling for it at the last family meeting?" I did indeed. He didn't do so well on social media in that room. God, it's just a very, very strange one. And one of the other stories that I wanted to discuss with you, the Israeli High Court of Justice has granted the state 6 week delay to demolish illegal Bedouin settlements near Jerusalem. What's behind this decision?
Yeah, so this is an interesting story about a Bedouin settlement, about approximately 70 families that have put down on state-owned land not far from Jerusalem. Interestingly, the High Court had previously ruled that this settlement needs to be demolished and had actually demanded that the state carry out the demolition. I'm not quite sure who actually brought the action within the High Court because obviously the land is state-owned, and so one would have thought that it would be the owner who would want to somehow take action through the courts in order to dispossess those people who have taken this land and to return the land to the rightful owner. But in this particular case, it was actually the state that was required to demolish the settlement and to move those people on. These are people apparently of the Jahalin tribe from the Bedouin, one of the Bedouin clan that have set up this illegal encampment in a place called Khan al-Ahmar. And apparently the government is currently negotiating with the tribe to somehow relocate them to a nearby site in exchange for giving them legal status, perhaps giving them residence cards, which they don't have, and giving them something which has got more infrastructure and a little bit more organized. And so finally, the High Court said to the government, "We're going to grant you another 6 weeks." Originally, the decision had required them to demolish this settlement already during the month of July. That's not going to happen anymore. They now have this delay. But the High Court was also warned that no more delays will be granted and these people need to be moved on. So we will be watching that one carefully. And as we go into the weekend, of course, we have Tu B'Av, which is a very nice thing to have immediately after Tisha B'Av, which is so intense. Tu B'Av, of course, the Jewish day of love, falls out on Shabbat this weekend. According to the Mishnah, apparently Tu B'Av was a joyous holiday in the days of the Temple, marking the beginning of the grape harvest, which also ended on Yom Kippur. And according to some sections of the Talmud, there were no holier days in the year for the Jews as Tu B'Av, the beginning of the grape harvest, and Yom Kippur, the end of the grape harvest, when apparently the unmarried girls of Jerusalem would come out in their white garments and they would go out to dance in the vineyards. And of course, this is why it's the day of love, because that would then bring out all the suitors who would try to seek out a potential partner from the girls dancing in the vineyard. So
absolutely amazing.
Let's show some love.
Absolutely right. I think it's time to bring that back. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Wishing you a fantastic weekend. A Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you on Monday morning.